Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here's your host, J.J. Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome into another edition of NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face-Off podcast. I'm, of course, your host, the Capitals correspondent, the one and only J.J. Regan. With me today, he is the Capitals insider. He is the Dwight Schrute to my Michael Scott. He is Tarik El-Bashir. Tarik?
Wasn't Mike Scott a pitcher for the Houston Astros circa 1985?
I believe he was.
What are you talking about, man?
This is from The Office. I wasn't picking up a random pitcher from the 80s. It's The Office.
Okay.
Michael Scott, Dwight Schrute, no idea what I'm talking about. You make fun of me for not understanding any of these references. Even the basic ones that I think are layups, you still have no idea what I'm talking about.
I've never seen The Office.
Okay. I would get mad at you, but Office wasn't in my top shows. It was all right, though. Good for a laugh every once in a while.
You watch a lot of TV.
Moving on. It's the Mailbag Pod, meaning you, the listener, get to decide today's topics. Today, you asked about Tom Wilson penalties, Alex Ovechkin back-checking, the John Carlson backup plan, and who could be the next to wear the C. We talk about all that and more, so let's get right into it.
Oh, my God. We're already wondering who's going to replace Alex as the captain?
Yep. Man, we are here to serve the people, Tart.
Man, people wonder about some stuff that, like, that's 4 years from now, man.
Potentially. Could be even further if he resigns.
Yeah. At minimum 4 years from now. Okay, go ahead. Hit me.
Let's start with Patrick O'Connor. He writes,
"What's up, Patrick?
Are people within the organization starting to get upset with all of the reputation calls against Wilson? It is starting to become obvious that the refs are making borderline calls going against Tom."
You know, I wouldn't say they're getting upset, but they certainly understand what's going on here. And you're right, some of them are reputation calls.
It's blatant.
It's pretty obvious. You know, he also has the fact that he's a 6'4", 225-pound man. You know, that doesn't help either. Just sometimes the bigger player in a collision is the one who gets, gets flagged, gets the infraction. He still takes too many minor penalties. Right now, he's taking the most on the team.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of offsets that with two things. Number one, he draws the most penalties per 60 minutes on the team. He's one of the top penalty drawing forwards in the NHL and has been for a couple of seasons, which is important because that puts the Capitals' very, very potent power play on the ice. Since February 2nd, the Caps have had the best power play in the league. Clicking it over 30%. So, and part of the reason it's been able to get out there as much and get as many opportunities is because Tom Wilson, because of the player he is, and maybe a little because of the reputation, he gets hauled down. He keeps his feet moving, but also he attracts a little extra attention because of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He might attract an extra pull or grab or hook, and so he offsets it a little bit. He also doesn't take as many boneheaded penalties, nearly as many boneheaded penalties as he did as a younger player. And I say that about a guy who's 23 years old. It just seems like he's been around forever. But there still are some penalties that he could avoid.
The one against the Anaheim Ducks.
The Anaheim Ducks, the interference. That was a very costly penalty for the Capitals. It was probably something that could have been avoided, and it put the game, sent the game going in the wrong direction for the Caps real quick.
Certainly did. And Tom Wilson did himself no favors in the preseason by having two questionable hits that both netted him suspensions.
There's a target on his back, no doubt about it.
So he has to be more careful. For the most part, I think he's done a good job, but you still see those pretty blatant reputation penalties, and that's a problem, especially considering...
Give me an example.
It was the game before Toronto, Ottawa, where there's a scrum, as you see, after every play, and all of a sudden, instead of nobody getting a penalty, and instead of matching minors...
It's a good example. It's a very
Tom
good
Wilson
example.
Is in the box for roughing.
Right.
He did nothing that was over the line. He did nothing to separate himself from anyone else. He was not an instigator. He was not an agitator. He was just in the scrum, and they picked him out of everyone and sent him to the box, giving Ottawa a power play.
Yeah.
That's a reputation penalty.
That is the definition, yes.
So, you know, I'm sure... They hate it when they see it. I hate it when I see it. But it comes with the territory being the type of player that Tom Wilson is.
Right.
Patrick O'Connor has a second question, and we are going to ask it because he has a strong Irish name. Is Braden Holtby relying on his positioning and technique too much? When a goal gets in, he seems nonchalant about it. From what I have seen, I think he just expects to be in the right position for every shot and isn't moving to make a Tim Thomas-like save.
You're just talking about two different styles of play.
Yes.
What makes Holtby so good when he's on top of his game is the efficiency of movement, is the fact that he's not flipping around like a fish out of water, relying on his athleticism. He does have some considerable athleticism. We saw that early on in his career. I mean, part of the reason he was a draft pick is because of that athleticism. They dialed some of that out and made him a very technical goaltender. And I know exactly what you're saying, because there are some times where he's beat and you're like, how come he didn't flip backwards and die for that? That's just not what he does anymore. He's in the right spot at all times. And I do think that part of what you're seeing is he is a tad off. The Raquel goal was an example of one of those. I mean, look, that's a sniper who has, you know, nearly 30 goals. So he's a good player. That was a good shot.
Yes.
That said, the way he kind of looked at his glove real quick after it went past him lets you know that he felt like he should have been in better, had a better angle, and probably should have got his leather on that puck. And if you go back and you look at that goal, it also looked like he had lost his net a little bit, because he had maybe come across too far, and Raquel had a lot of net to aim at. And when Holtby's on his game, and you go back and you look at that reverse angle of where a shooter's shooting from, there's nothing. He gives you nothing.
Right.
You're shooting. You're just hoping that it hits something and somehow finds a hole in his pads.
Braden Holtby is not a controlled chaos goalie like the Dominic Hasek's, like the Tim Thomas.
There was no control chaos with that guy. He was just chaos.
We're not saying that he's worse than those goalies. We're saying that he plays a different style than those goalies.
I'd much rather have a Braden Holtby type, because it's a more predictable style. It's going to have more success over longer periods. You're going to be able to play longer because you're not going to be exposing yourself to strains and injuries and being in weird spots.
There are some goalies who make everything they do look hard. Braden Holtby makes everything he does when he's on his game look easy. Thank you for your questions, Patrick. Moving on to Jerome Johnson. He cites the Jacob Urobeck visa situation as he writes, does the NHL have special arrangements with U.S. and Canada immigration authorities to allow non-citizen players to quickly get visas, which allow them to play for their teams?
I can tell you this. I don't know a whole lot about the process, but there is a person with the Capitals who is, part of their job description is helping foreign nationals secure work visas to be here in the United States and work. Because at the end of the day, you still are, you know, Urobeck is still a Czech-born player who is coming from Canada, who is now trying to earn a lot of money in the United States.
Mm.
So there's a lot going on there. So it does take a few days. But look, there are, like I said, there is a person with every team. It's not their sole job, but it's part of their job description. They have connections at the embassy, and they have connections, you know, in other places where they're able to expedite these things and get them done quicker.
Yes.
Than, like, let's say you and I would. Like, if you were a Czech-born person who did not play hockey.
Yes. If I was coming here to be a banker, it would take me more than a few days to get a visa.
Right. And look, let's be honest about this. There are when it comes to immigration issues in this country, if you are elite at what you do, there are exceptions made for you, period.
Mm-hmm.
Period. If you're, there are 800 people who are capable of playing in the National Hockey League. Most of them are going to play in the United States. they are going to get exceptions if you're born in another country because you have a talent that a normal American-born person doesn't have, and they even the government works with you to expedite getting your papers in order so you don't miss too many games.
We are going to get right back to your questions right after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Let's move on to Greg Christian, who has three
questions.
What's up,
Greg?
He has three questions this week.
Man.
I know. First, he has a follow-up question, something he wrote about a few weeks ago. Do you have any insight into what's said and or who might be saying it on or behind the bench during a period? Like, and he cites the second period against Detroit, which I know was awful. It seems like somebody should be trying to get the team's head in the game, but these things are happening so much that it makes you wonder if everybody's just going with the flow. Also, is it interesting to you that Trotz hasn't chosen to use a timeout in those situations?
Well, let me start with the timeout. Timeouts in hockey are used for basically two situations. You've given up two or three goals in a very short amount of time, and you just need to get your team to the bench and halt the momentum of the opponent and kind of let your guys regroup for a moment. Or there is something going on late in the game where you need to set up a strategy. You need to get the whiteboard out and go, all right, boys, we got 7 seconds, offensive zone draw. Nick, you're going to win the faceoff. Alex, you're going to be here. Carly, you're going to be here. And here's what we're trying to do. Those are basically the two times you use
Yes, but they save them also for the challenges. So they don't use those early in the game because they want those in case they need them for a challenge.
So to answer your question about the timeouts, Greg, I don't see many coaches using timeouts just to kind of calm things down on the bench or say, hey, why are we playing crappy right now? Now, if you give up 3 goals in 37 seconds, yeah, you might want to burn that timeout. Getting to your first question, whether things are said, things are said. But at the same time, just like any profession, high pressure situation, you can't just. It doesn't happen all the time. It's not the same people who are speaking up. And you remember, again, getting back to there are 800 of these guys in the world. There's not a whole lot that needs to be said once you get to this level. At least not said all the time. Because if you're a coach or a leader, a captain, an alternate captain, who's constantly on the guys about every little thing, then guess what? You get drowned out after a while because that's the guy who's always yapping, right? So, I would say after particularly bad periods this year, there have been some leaders who have stepped up in the room and said things. But again, you got to kind of pick your spots because, again, these are the best in the world at what they do. They're not like, your bantam players from down the street that you can, just kind of berate and yell at and tell them to be better.
Right.
You have to be more strategic and kind of judicious with when you lower the boom.
Yeah, you're not going to see the Phil Kessel, Evgeny Malkin shouting match on the bench like you see with the Penguins. That's just not in the personality of the Capitals. And that's not to say, everyone loves what the Penguins do and say, well, that's why the Caps are losing because they don't have that element. No, stop. It's just, in terms of personality, that personality is different from what the Capitals have. And that's as far as it goes. There's nothing to read further into that. They have vocal leaders. They're more vocal in the locker room than they are on the bench. They say things on the bench when they need to, but they are more vocal in the locker room. Moving on, was there something to the Taylor Chorney situation that fans didn't see or hear about? He was +8 on a team that's been struggling defensively, but he still didn't get much playing time. It felt to me like there was something the Caps didn't like about him, but I haven't heard anything that supports that.
Well, I mean, his +8 is like a lot of number 7 defensemen. It doesn't really tell the whole story.
Sheltered.
He's starting every single shift just about in the offensive zone.
Mm-hmm.
When he's in the lineup, it's not against the better teams. So there's a lot going on there. Look, I can't say for certain what was going on there, but I feel like this was a merit-based decision. They felt like they had better players.
Yep.
And when you've got a 30-year-old journeyman and you've got two rookies who have to learn how to play the NHL game, one's 24, one's 22, I think, you have to give, if you're developing your team the right way, you're going to give those minutes to the rookies, not to the 30-year-old journeyman who's in the last year of his deal. And I look, here's, and Taylor Tourney is a great dude. I like
He's
dealing with
guy.
Him. He was a really, really good dude to deal with, a solid professional. But here's all you need to know. I was in Columbus when he got traded there, and this is when the Caps were in town to play. He was going to make his debut as a Blue Jacket. And then the Blue Jackets got a better player. They got Ian Cole. So Tourney had been told by Tortorella, you're in the lineup tonight. Be ready. You're going to make your debut. Congratulations. We're excited to see what you got. Oh, sorry. We got Ian Cole. He's better than you, and he's going to come into the lineup, and it's going to push you back out.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, this is, you know, the Capitals missed the mark, or, you know, this is like some game-changing type of situation. I think that he probably will get another opportunity. You know, maybe he's a guy who goes on a PTO, or maybe he's a guy, you know, in training camp next year. But when you wonder about whether the Capitals or any of your favorite teams missed on a player, the best way to figure out if you're the best way to understand or get a feel for your talent evaluators and whether they know what they're looking at is, where does that player end up next?
Mm-hmm.
If Taylor Tourney somehow ends up in a top four on a playoff contending team next year, the Capitals screwed up.
Right.
If he gets invited to camp on a PTO and doesn't make a team, the Capitals were ahead of the curve.
Yep.
So that's what I always do when I'm thinking about whether the scouting department is doing their job. I will occasionally, when I have some time and I'm on a plane and I got nothing else to do, I'll go look at some of the guys who, you know, have played for the Capitals and where are they now? What's their contract situation? How much are they playing? Just to kind of get a feel. So I would encourage you to do that with Tourney.
Yeah, Tourney. I don't know if there was anything going on in the locker room, but every time they mentioned him to the media, they were always effusive in their praise of him. They always said he was a consummate professional. He was handling being the number seven and not getting a whole lot of playing time the right way. And it sure seemed like he was handling it well every time we spoke to him. So I don't think that was it at all. I think he's a good dude. He just fell on the depth chart because they had other players in front of him that they needed and wanted to play. And at the end of the day, they had too many defensemen. One guy had to go, and it was Taylor Tourney. Last question for Greg. Earlier in the season, we often saw Ovi back-checking doggedly and even blocking shots. I haven't seen much of that lately, and his stats are bearing it out. His plus-minus was -3 last week, and in the last 5 weeks, he's been even or minus every week. Do you think that is a concern where the coaching staff is concerned, or are they just inclined to let Ovi be Ovi?
Well, Greg, I'm going to tell you what I've seen here over the past couple of weeks. I've seen an Alex Ovechkin who is hell-bent on getting to 600 goals and getting to 50 goals for the season. And the best way to get there is maybe you don't come as far back into the zone for puck support on a breakout. Maybe you cheat a little bit and try to stay a little high, stay around that offensive or that defensive blue line so you can get that puck going in the other direction and give yourself a little more space once you get that breakout pass. That's what I've seen. I haven't seen it all the time. I still have seen some pretty good back checks from number 8 in recent games. But that said, I have also seen a player who looks more like the player who scored 65 goals, you know, way back when. He wants to score 50. He wants to get to 600. And I think that the best way to put yourself in position, at least in his thinking, is to be ready for that breakout pass with a little bit of room, you know, and maybe that's coming at the expense of putting back pressure on players. And again, coming into the zone deep before you start to hook off and look for try to support the puck on the way out of the zone.
I think we've seen some of the best back checking of his career this season. But you are absolutely right, Craig. Lately, I think he's got number 600 on his mind. We're going to answer the rest of your questions right after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Josh Helgeson has a question about John Carlson. He says, if the Capitals are unable to re-sign John Carlson, what does that do to the Stanley Cup window with Ovechkin and Backstrom, and how would they replace him?
It's a great question. I mean, I got to imagine, I know the Capitals want to get a deal done with him.
Yes. Brian McClellan has said
it. Carlson has been a little more elusive, but I think that's just what a player does. Yep. There's no reason to commit and say, oh, this is where I want to be the rest of my career. I mean, that kills your leverage. I think with the season he is having, with the job this power play is doing right now, I think he's a must sign. I think he's a player that the Capitals need to get wrapped up. If they do lose him, then there'll be plenty of players on the open market.
I think the Capitals are going to have to take a serious look at their team at the end of this season. I think they're going to have to do that every year until they decide that the window is closed. Depending on how this season ends, they're going to have to take a serious look at their roster and decide where they are. If they think they still can make another run next season, then I think they're going to try to re-sign John Carlson real hard.
Even if you lose Carlson, if you were to lose him and you do believe that your window is mostly closed, you still got to replace him with
something. Yes, you still got to replace him. But that's a question of whether you replace him with, say, a Jonas Siegenthaler, or you replace him with a
Mike Green,
lower-end free agent, or whether you look at a higher-end free agent, or if you have that money, go all in on a guy like Erik Karlsson, who you know is going to be available. I don't know if the Capitals have the assets to trade for a guy like Erik Karlsson, but you know what? If you think your window is open and you just lost John Carlson and now you have a little bit of money to spend, you have to at least kick the tires on that, because how often does a superstar player become available via trade or however able to acquire him? I think you have to at least kick the tires on that. If you think the window is open, it makes no sense. If you think
I can't imagine that, regardless of what happens in this postseason, that the Capitals are going to believe that the window is closed, because you still are going to have Ovechkin, you're still going to have Backstrom, you're still going to have Holtby. I think that deep down they feel like they still have 2 or 3 years left. The window's not as wide open as it was the previous 2 years, but there's still a chance for them to punch through and maybe, you know, catch some breaks and make a run.
The years they gave Oshie, the years they gave Kuznetsov, the years they gave Orlov makes me think that you are right, that they're not going to think that they need to rebuild. Having said that, you go in the first round of the playoffs and you lose in 5 games, that can change very quickly. So that's all I'm saying. And all of a sudden, the way you look at your team and your future changes if you just get your doors blown off in the first round matchup that perhaps you think you should have won.
I think this team is still several years away from a tear-it-down rebuild. I think they can still nibble around the edges for a number of years and continue to put players around number 8 and company.
I don't think we're going to see what we saw from the New York Rangers or the Toronto Maple Leafs prior to Auston Matthews, because they're still going to have Kuznetsov under contract, Orlov under contract, Holtby under contract. So I don't think we're going to see total tear-it-down, but you are going to see tweaks if they get the doors blown off. Moving on to our final question of the day, Brandon Hamilton from, as he calls it, the Slower Lower Delaware. He writes, who do you see as the next player to wear the C for the Caps, assuming Ovi remains the captain for the length of his contract?
I mean, that's so many years away, man. That's so many years away. So many things can happen between now and then. But if I were going to say, just give you a name, I think Tom Wilson has captain qualities. You know, he probably needs to add a little more to his game to kind of back that up. He's having a great season right now. I struggle to look at 2021-22, and that's when Ovi's a UFA and probably going to resign. You know, there's a chance he'll resign here for another few years after that, seeing the need to really discuss who the next captain is going to be. But, I mean, if I were to throw someone out there, I would say Tom Wilson.
Tom Wilson is an excellent pick. If Ovechkin leaves in 2021 at the end of his contract, my pick would be TJ Oshie, who will still have 2 years remaining on his 8-year deal. I think he would be an ideal pick, because I think you sign him 8 years because his production is going to go down eventually. I think they looked at him for his leadership qualities, so I think he would be someone they would look at for sure. As for some of the other guys that they've got long-term, I don't really see it from Orlov or Kuznetsov, so I think Tom Wilson or TJ Oshie would be the two guys there. Thank you, everyone, for your questions. We can't have these mailbag podcasts without you, without your participation, and you guys brought it again this week, so we really appreciate that. If you want to have your questions read and answered on the next podcast, you can send it in to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. We answer pretty much every question that you guys send, so don't feel like, oh, they're never going to pick my question. We pretty much pick every question, so if you've got a question, send it on in, and we will answer it on the next Mailbag podcast. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe anywhere podcasts are available, and be sure to give us a good rating and review. Those things really do matter to help spread the word about the show. You've made it through the end of this podcast, so clearly you don't hate us. So why don't you go on, give us a good rating and a good review, and subscribe to the podcast. Then steal your friends' phones and subscribe on their phones. It really does help us out. Thank you, as always, for participating and for tuning in. For Tariq El-Bashir, this is JJ Regan. Now let's get the puck out of here.